Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Radio.com Sports presents Bet Sweats with Joe Ostrowski, breaking down the latest in sports betting.
You are sitting pretty if you bet a lot of underdogs in week 12 in the NFL with two games left, 9-5 against the spread underdogs. So a big week in the books. Joe Ostrowski, Ross Tucker with you on BetSweats, Radio.com Sports. And we bring in Adam Chernoff. He's a pro bettor and he hosts a Simple Handicap podcast at Adam Chernoff on Twitter. And Adam, you are one of those bettors who's been in the black over the last couple of weeks. So I assume that you were on some dogs, maybe some unders, had more unders than overs so far in week number 12. So what's changed? Because we've chronicled throughout the year some of the issues that you were having earlier on.
In the green, Joe, not the black. It's more significant than that the last couple of weeks. Not much has changed. It was sort of like I was saying throughout the first 2 months of the season where things were not going well. It was just a matter of sort of sticking to the numbers and trusting things. In the last, really since the Vikings Monday night game, things have turned around. So it was a really big week for me last week, and then it was another good one this week. So very much moving back in the right direction and feeling good about the week coming up as well.
And I know you said, Adam, just to trust the numbers, is there something specific that has kind of gone your way or something specific you've had success with, whether it's underdogs or totals or anything like that?
Nothing really over the course of the season. I know early in the year, totals were killing me. Was just with all those over adjustments that were happening in the first couple of weeks where scoring went through the roof, I was really, really not doing well with totals. And so around week 8, I sort of stepped back a bit from totals, and that brought me back to sort of focusing more on sides, which have been really, really good to me the last few weeks. And so that's maybe something I think that I could point at that's definitely changed over the last about 4 to 6 weeks, is just sort of stepping away from totals. But other than that, really, it was just a case of, like, I look back through the first 5 or 6 weeks and there were 12 different bets that I had that lost by half a point or a point. So whether it was a case of just being on the wrong side of the number or being on the wrong side of some luck late in games, that was really something that didn't really have me too concerned about the prices I was making and how I was betting. And now a lot of that's starting to go back the other way. So I think it's just a matter of how tight some of the prices have been this season and just falling sort of on the wrong side of the coin, so to speak. So everything's going back the right direction now, certainly.
Adam, you know, the theme of 2020 in life and in sports is just, hey, nothing is normal this year. But what you've seen with the big swing, so you go down early and then it comes back the other way. You've been just crushing it lately. Is that kind of normal with NFL betting, or are these extreme swings kind of an anomaly and it's usually more stable than this?
Well, I look back, like last season, for example, the first 8 weeks were terrific for me. And like I went way up and it was a terrific start to the season. And then basically all of November was a losing month. And then December and the playoffs came back. So over the course of the last 13 years, I can definitely point to sort of occasions within seasons that were really, really good or really, really bad. But the one thing that definitely stood out for me this year was it was not only September, but it was October. And then it was the first week in November as well, where things were just seemingly as bad as they could possibly be. So this one was definitely a lot longer than seasons past, but it seems like every season there's sort of an up and a down. And I think with the NFL, it tends to be more pronounced because you obviously get games once a week, unlike basketball or anything else you might be betting where it's like a nightly sport and you're losing streaks or maybe 5 days, 8 days, 14 days, what have you. But like when in the NFL, if you go on a multiple week losing streak, like it feels a lot longer than it was. So when you're losing every single week for the majority of 2 months, it seems a lot longer. But this year was certainly longer than usual. But again, it was sort of, there's now 8-9 weeks left with the playoffs included, so plenty of time to keep this going.
What was your biggest takeaway, Adam, from week 12? Whether it was box score, just something you saw that maybe is actionable going forward, including here in week 13?
So I think a couple off the bat. I think you have to point to the Raiders and the Falcons game. The Falcons win 43-6. Raiders have 150 yards of penalties, turn the ball over 5 times. From an offensive output standpoint, the two teams were actually quite close in terms of yards per play, total yards gained, and how those offenses were moving the ball. So like when you look into the box score, it was on sort of the offensive output numbers, anything but a 43-6 victory. And then you look into sort of the penalties and the turnovers, which killed the Raiders throughout the game. That sort of makes up the story. But it's very rare that you see a team take advantage and maximize all of those opportunities to the extent that the Falcons did within that game. And even watching Derek Carr in the press conference after, he said it was frustrating because we lost by 30-plus points, but I felt like the entire game we were one or two plays away from really putting up a lot of points. And I think that that sort of spoke to the Falcons and just how, I guess, misleading that final score was. And we're sort of seeing that somewhat reflected in these prices where the Falcons really didn't get a bump up against the Saints in terms of that price where it was early in the week and where it is now. And we're seeing about a half point adjustment in favor of the Falcons, which would bring me to sort of my second point, which to me, like, had the Saints at a price that was before all of the news struck. So that was obviously quite fortunate to be on the right side of that. But the thing that just shocked me was the Saints chose to play how they played against the Denver Broncos. And for those that didn't watch the game, they started off with 15 runs out of 17 plays. And Taysom Hill didn't go over. He didn't have positive passing yards until late in the second quarter. For a long time, the biggest play for the Saints in that game was the Broncos jumping offside. And it was bizarre to me because against the Falcons 2 weeks ago, we were sort of expecting this kind of gimmicky run-first offensive style from the Saints with Taysom Hill in. And the entire game against the Falcons, it was this straight drop-back passing game. Taysom Hill didn't have any designed runs against the Falcons, and he only threw 2 passes outside of the pocket. And so I don't know what made them switch, especially in a game where you know if you score 14, 17 points, you're probably good. And it was a perfect opportunity to potentially build on that drop-back passing game that we saw against the Falcons. The Saints went a complete 180 in the other direction. And obviously they benefit from multiple turnovers in short fields. Like that was a game that they were always going to win. The Broncos didn't have a quarterback, but for the majority of the game, the Saints didn't play with the quarterback either. And so like, I don't know what to make of that going forward, but it's probably the first time that I've ever seen a team win by 28 points. And people I've spoken to this morning, and then you can also see it reflected in the betting market, the Saints are getting a bit of a downgrade within this matchup and the rematch against the Falcons this week. So it's not significant, but you would expect when a team whose defense is trending top 5 in the league, both against the pass and the rush, since their bye week back in week 6, they lead the league in points allowed over that stretch, and they come off a win of 28 points, you would expect that to have a bit more of an impact, especially with the short price on the road. And we're seeing anything but with this price moving about a half point back towards the Falcons, who very much were in favor of a misleading box score of their own. So I don't know what's going on with the Saints on offense and how they're going to continue to sort of treat that, but we saw a very, very, very different style that they chose to do against the Broncos than what we saw in that first game against the Falcons. So certainly something I'll be looking into this week.
Adam, let's hit on KC and the top of your power ratings right now. 10-1, terrific year, obviously, for the Chiefs here. Mahomes is probably going to win the MVP. He should, at least right now. But over the last three wins, it was a field goal win yesterday against Tampa. Last week, comeback victory. They win by 4 against the Raiders. They beat the Panthers by 2 before their bye back in week number 9. So they haven't covered the number in their last three games. Do you still have the Chiefs kind of on their own tier in your power ratings? And if so, how's the rest of your top five stack up?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to do a little more tinkering sort of as these games tonight and then tomorrow finish up. And obviously with Pittsburgh and Baltimore, two teams, Pittsburgh well in the top five, Baltimore right on the fringe. And then Seattle's another team that's right on the fringe as well. So we could see some adjustments going on. But I've got KC. Again, my power ratings are out of 100, so I still have them in the 90s. I have the high of their range at 95. I actually think, like, watching back that game, I watched the majority of it against the Buccaneers as I was sort of flipping back and forth from the Saints game. And then I also watched the Raiders game on Sunday night. But, like, I almost felt at times that I was more impressed by what they did against the Raiders than what they did against the Buccaneers. And maybe that's a weird thing to sort of say, but, like, against the Raiders, I felt like from an offensive perspective, the entire game, there was never any sense of panic and they did whatever they wanted. And the adjustment they made against the Raiders, who really sat back in a similar zone style to what we saw the Chargers do to them and then the Texans do to them early in the season. When I'm seeing like those early adjustments that Andy Reid makes and how like the offense knows what the defense is doing immediately as they start doing it, and then they adjust their entire game plan and sort of just maximize that one sort of advantage that they're seeing in play. Like, that's really impressive to me. And we've seen them do it a lot of times during the season. Against the Bucs, they came out in the first half. Obviously, they put up ridiculous numbers, get out to a 17-point lead. And then the second half, Tampa Bay shifted around their defensive scheme. They started doubling one side of the field, and then they were leaving Watkins or whoever open one-on-one on the other side. And the Chiefs offense sort of sputtered out, and they, surprisingly to me, didn't make those adjustments later in the second half. Obviously, they still win, and for the majority of the game, we're in control. But like, we really sort of saw them plateau midway through the third quarter into the fourth, to the point where they needed that drive late in the game to sort of seal the game with a win and a first down. So to me, against the Raiders, where Las Vegas was playing in like a very specific defense, the Chiefs adjusted. And they just worked them for the entire game. Bucks made that big adjustment in the second half, and the Chiefs didn't do anything to adjust for it. So for me, that was interesting. And it's fun to watch them every week because they do something so quickly when they identify what's going on with the defense. But it was strange to me to see that they didn't continue to sort of push against the Buccaneers in that game. So still have them number one. Pittsburgh's right up there at number two. And then it's sort of a mess between the Rams, Saints, Packers, Seahawks, and then the Titans are sort of knocking on the door in the fringe as well. But have had to drop Baltimore quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. Don't think I'm going to obviously make any adjustments to them this week. Really not sure what to make of the Ravens at this point. But I'll have more of sort of a concrete top five once the game on Tuesday wraps up.
But what do you make, Adam, of the Bucks on the other side? What are you putting? Where are you putting them in your power rankings? How do you feel about them after what you said about the Chiefs?
The Bucs are probably the most disappointing team in the league at the moment, I would think, because they've have, like, I wasn't high on them coming into the season because I thought that it was very clear what happens to a quarterback in his first year in an Arian system. And you can go back between Palmer and Luck and Jameis and other QBs who have started in their first year with this Arian system. They get hit a lot more. They're forced to hold on to the ball for a lot longer, and they have to make deeper passes downfield. And there was a very clear decline with Brady coming into the season the last 3 years in New England. He was obviously getting much less mobile within the pocket. He was struggling in terms of adjusted completion percentage, throwing downfield 15 yards or more. Like, it didn't match up. And at this point, like, you're watching them against the Saints, you're watching them against the Rams, you're watching them against the Chiefs. It's the mix between all of this talent somehow not clicking together. And I don't know if it's like Brady looks much more comfortable throwing to Gronkowski than he does anyone else on the field. And I know we hear Romo the entire game talking about the communication issues and how receivers aren't reading the blocking and the protection schemes, and they're not getting out and sitting where they need to be on these plays where there's clearly a hot route needed. Like, it's I don't know if it's more that or if it's more this decline of Brady that I sort of had in my mind coming in. But just overall, it's a huge disappointment because the secondary, which was the youngest unit on paper coming into the season in terms of age per starter, they've actually played reasonably well in a number of these games. But now we're looking at an offense with all these names and all this talent that seems like it could click at any moment, but then you see them in these games like we have the last couple of weeks, and it just looks so, it just looks like so much effort to pick up a simple pass play, and it looks like everything's so tight on the field. So I've got them, like, again, they're another one of those fringe top five teams. I've got this logjam of teams between 75 and 85 within my ratings, and I feel like if it ever clicks for the Buccaneers, there's so much talent that, like, they can play to the high end of their range and be this team that's, like we saw yesterday, a 3-point underdog to Kansas City. And I think that that's a reasonable price. But then in these games where it just doesn't work, they just look so much worse. So there's a huge range on the Buccaneers, just a really difficult team to price at the moment.
Adam, we've got Monday Night Football and I think Tuesday Night Football this evening, Seahawks and the Eagles. This line is now Seattle minus 6.5, a total of 49. And for Tuesday, scheduled, you've got the Steelers favored by 10.5 against the Ravens. Obviously, Lamar Jackson, big story there. And that total all the way down to 40.5. Any interest for either game?
This becomes sort of a standard answer in the segment, but no, absolutely not. And the interesting thing about Seattle-Philly was this was at 5 midweek, and so when the limits were first bumped at some of the bigger books, Chris, Pinnacle as well, the Eagles actually took money. It went from 5.5 down to a flat 4, and it held for like 24 hours or so. And so, like, it's not like this has been one-way action for the Seahawks. It has since the Thanksgiving games finished. So, like, from Wednesday till the end of Thursday, this was Eagles taking money. And then everyone woke up on Friday and they're like, okay, let's look forward to the Sunday games. And then all of a sudden it's been one way action on the Seahawks since. So it really depends how you look at this number, but like the number at 6.5 is for the Seahawks to be laying on the road with that defense. Like it's a huge number, but it's just tough to get involved with the Eagles. Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, has been walking out on the team at practice. I don't know if that's just a frustration thing or if it's a like attempt to motivate the team and the coaching staff. I don't know what's going on there, but that's been a story that's been going on all week. And now you have the rumor of Jalen Hurts, who's going to be much more implemented within the offense tonight. According to the rumors, there were rumors he was going to start. It doesn't seem to be that that's going to be the case, but he's certainly going to be involved a lot more. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Ertz is not going to be back on the field. They were expecting him to potentially be in, which obviously gives them a much better look with two tight ends. But I don't know what to make of this Eagles team at the moment and some of the stuff that's sort of been going on behind the scenes this week in practice. I would love to take the points here and bet against the Seahawks. If it gets to 7, like, okay, it starts to look a little bit different. I don't know if we're going to get there, but at 6.5, it's going to be a pass for me tonight.
What about week 13, Adam? Any early lines you like there that you've seen?
Yeah, I took Tennessee this morning at -4, and that quickly, after putting the bet in, jumped up to -5. I think if you can find a -5 right now at -110 or better, that's still worth a look. Cleveland, and this is a team I've had circled now for a couple of weeks and probably one I'm going to lean on and be against in spots going forward. Before the game against Jacksonville, sort of have my notes going into that game, and then I'll comment on the Jags game. But before the game against Jacksonville, it was 35 days since the Browns played a game that wasn't played with winds at least 20 miles per hour or pouring rain for the majority of four quarters. So plus a bye week, the Browns went four games without playing in a game that had like what we would call neutral weather that wasn't severely hindering the passing game for the Browns and aiding the Browns defense. And this was a Cleveland team that was bottom eight in both passing and rushing before they went into this stretch. And within that stretch, their opponents were the Raiders and the Texans, which would have been the two most difficult teams on their schedule in terms of opposing offensive efficiency. It's like 45 mile per hour winds sustained the entire game against the Raiders, who could neither team could pass the ball in that game. Same thing happens against the Texans. And so the Browns really get a pass in terms of how their defense were able to handle that game. And so yesterday against the Jags, first game we've seen in 5 weeks, with the bye included, that the Browns had played any opponent in neutral weather where either team could throw the football. The Jags are without their best wide receiver, they're without their number three receiver, they're without an offensive lineman, and they're starting Mike Glennon, who hasn't had a start in a couple of seasons, making his first start with the team. The Jags go out 50% success rate passing the football, 6.7 yards per attempt. And then Robinson out of the backfield runs for a 60% success rate and 5.6 a carry. And there's four explosive runs for 10 yards or more on first down against this Browns defense, which they lose starting safety Ronnie Harrison on the first play of the game. Denzel Ward, their best cover corner, is still dealing with injuries. You put all of this together, now they go on the road to face the Tennessee Titans, whose offense is trending in the right direction. Even if they get Myles Garrett back on the defensive line, Ryan Tannehill, extremely good when under pressure, but sort of the kicker in all of this, right, is Derrick Henry out of the backfield against this Browns defense. Like, these numbers for Cleveland have just been so either suppressed on the offensive side or aided on the defensive side that now we're starting to see a lot of these prices skewed to sort of reflect what we've seen the last four to five weeks. Now we sort of get the truth in the Jags game, and this team starts to look much like the team we saw weeks 1 to 6. This is just a brutal matchup for Cleveland going into Tennessee. I think this number, I make it 6. I think 6.5 is also reasonable. The Titans are going to continue to get bet up. I'm sure we'll see a 6 with Tennessee at some point this week. If you like the spread, great. If you want to wait and take a teaser, that's another option too. But certainly Tennessee the side in this one.
All right, Adam Chernoff, good stuff there. He hosts the Simple Handicap podcast. Check that out. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Chernoff. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
Russ, what else is new? Some bad news in college football breaking on this Monday morning. So if Ohio State misses one more game, they are not eligible for the Big Ten title game, right? And with all the COVID issues they're going through and the Big Ten protocols, you're thinking, oh, there's a chance that they're not going to be eligible. Maybe it's going to be Indiana. They take care of business on Saturday. They're 5-1. According to Bruce Feldman, Michael Penix Jr. expected to miss the rest of the season because of a lower leg injury.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a shame. Indiana's having an all-time season. It's their best season I can ever remember. Such a shame. He had played really well, too. I don't know what they have behind him, because if you remember, last year's quarterback, Peyton Ramsey, is now at Northwestern. You know, they had two good ones at Indiana. They had Penix Jr. and Ramsey. Ramsey transfers to Northwestern. I don't even know what Indiana has behind Penix at this point. That's rough.
Hey, Northwestern, how about beat Michigan State? Can you do that? Jesus. Lose outright to Michigan State. You never know which Sparty team's going to show up. So we'll see. As soon as the news broke about Ohio State, I took some Indiana 50-1 to win the Big Ten, but now that's going to be in trouble. We'll see. We'll see if Ohio State is even going to be participating. So you can have Wisconsin and Ohio State not allowed to play. That's 2020 for you. Some people are happy just winning, while others, well, they want more. I get that, and so does PointsBet. That's why PointsBet gives you a faster, easier way to turn every game, every shot, every minute into a chance for epic victory. That's why so many sports bettors in the know call PointsBet. Innovative and lightning quick. It's the reason I ditched my other books. It's the easy-to-use app for when I simply want to reach legendary status. Rated number one on Trustpilot, so get the app real sports fans use. Download the PointsBet app today. Use promo code BETSWEATS, BETSWEATS, to get $100 for depositing only $20. PointsBet, stay sharp. Must be present in Illinois, New Jersey, Indiana, or Iowa. Must be 21 plus. Additional T's and C's apply. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER if in Illinois, New Jersey, 1-800-9 with it if in Indiana, 1-800-BETS-OFF if in Iowa.